This is Back to Life, County Wexford Stories of Derelict Homes, a new podcast series produced by Wexford County Council in conjunction with South East Radio. There are buildings all across County Wexford with stories still waiting to be told. Homes that were once full of life, now standing empty. Shop fronts with potential sitting idle above them. Farmhouses that have seen generations come and go. But in recent years, something has started to change. Across the county, people are taking on these properties, restoring them, reimagining them, and in many cases, completely transforming them. This is Back to Life, County Wexford Stories of Derelict Homes, a new podcast series from Wexford County Council. In this series, we'll meet the people behind these projects, hear the challenges, the setbacks, the unexpected moments, and what it really takes to bring a property back to life. And along the way, we'll also hear how supports are helping to make it possible. Because these aren't just buildings, they're second chances. There's something about an old farmhouse. The walls hold history, the land tells its own story. But when those homes fall into disrepair, they can quickly fade into the background. In Newbon, Seamus Butler saw something different. Where others might have seen a project too far gone, he saw potential. What followed was a journey of restoration that brought a rural property back into use and back into the community. Because sometimes bringing a home back to life means reconnecting with what matters most.
Bring me back to the beginning about how it all kind of started. Was it yours originally or did you buy it?
So I suppose, look, there was 11 in my family. So a rather large family and there was loads of life in the house. And I live half a mile away from the my home place, so where I grew up. The house became derelict when both my parents fell ill. Certainly vacant first and then derelict. So I suppose there was a romantic side to it with all the life in the house to bring it back to life and restore some noise and fun and life around the farmyard because it's a proper farmhouse. So that's really where it came from. I had been at the plough match in 2023, I think it was, and I had stalled on one of the stalls about the grant. So that's where it kind of kicked off and it got me thinking. I suppose in October, I think, I spoke to David Fitzpatrick and we did a survey on the house. Obviously to prove then that it's both vacant and derelict. And I think it was back then Tom Bates came out to me and I'd been speaking to Tom obviously and I think I got approved formally for the grant then in December 24. And obviously then, you know, with the property market and the rental market and I have four kids, so I could see that down the line that, you know, one of them would be able to at some stage take over.
Talk us through the journey then of bringing the property back into use and how the vacant property and the structural top-up grants supported that for you.
The grant was central to all this, which allowed me to eventually know that I would be getting the full grant. I was approved for the full grant, which was 70,000. So look, at I financed I suppose the project through the farm. It was quite a positive year for cattle over the last 2 years. And I suppose it was a perfect timing for me. Secured some finances also from the credit union and the green loan. No mortgage. And, you know, I suppose for anybody starting out that way, it's quite hard to get a mortgage. So that was kind of where the finances came about. I suppose I was quite fortunate in that I worked with some local suppliers. I'd say to anybody starting off, if you can stay local, all the better. Electrician was K2 Electric, our plumber was Murphy Plumbing, and our carpentry was James Dooley, and our groundworks, etc., was Groundworks. They were key to me in terms of working with me, in terms of the timings, and because obviously, as you know, the grant comes at the end. I'd want to make people fully aware of that because it's quite a big undertaking. I ended up with a total overhaul of the house. Nothing only other than four walls. I like salvaging stuff, but look, the house was built pre the war and finished in the war, so materials were scarce, so and probably under spec at the time. So I was left with four walls and obviously had to start off with digging down in the ground to put in insulation. I went with underfloor heating. I thought it was the way to go. New windows, once the joinery, complete new roof, solar panels, the complete overhaul. So quite a big project and quite a huge undertaking, to be quite honest.
So with that then, what was the biggest challenge then in terms of restoring the house compared to, I suppose, if someone was in a town or more urban area? What did you feel was kind of the big obstacles for you?
Look, at when if you've seen the house from the outside, you'd say, sure, yeah, it was a bigger project than probably what
we first thought, maybe.
Yeah, and I suppose the size of the house, it's a good size house as well. Maybe typically a two up, two down in a town, it's a smaller footprint and I suppose less cost. However, I suppose there's a lot of positives as well. So I did a huge amount of the work myself. But the biggest challenge for me was once I set up my suppliers, my local suppliers, working with them, that was brilliant. And the biggest challenge was probably keeping the project finance and obviously trying to get best prices from suppliers. I'd imagine if I was to do the job today, it's probably another 20%.
What was the finish date?
So I suppose I got approved in December 24.
Yeah.
We tipped in with the digger straight away and we had the site cleared over the Christmas, cleared out the house, full belt on, and we had the project completed. I think we were approved for grant payment in very late November 25.
So less than 12 months.
Less than 12 months. That's I worked on the property the whole time.
Yeah.
I worked with the suppliers, as I've alluded to already. And look, at non-stop, that was it. The long hours and the kids are responsible for painting. The wife also. So look, it was very much a family project. Look, they enjoyed it. They got a good summer out of it. So there was a great buzz around the place.
In terms of then the rental, you're renting the property now. So is that private or through the council? And how important is that in terms of keeping rural communities active and sustainable? You kind of touched on it there.
It's massive, really. It's massive. I went private rent, even though this is Clongeen, there just isn't properties out there. I think I had the property rented within about 2 weeks. So there's huge demand out there. The bigger picture for me was always down the road, where some of the kids would have a place to rent and eventually take over. Yeah, look, at in rural communities, there's not a whole lot outside of the GA to live in the rural communities. So, you know, that's vital. The GA plays a vital role. And having houses and new houses come on board plays a vital role. It's probably one thing we're struggling a bit here in Clongeen because we're so rural. The amount of families coming into the area is quite small. And obviously that has knock-on effects for our school and for our GA. I think we've about 94 in our school and we've only one school in the parish. So I think you can get a picture there fairly quick.
Talk me through the process then in terms of getting the appointment and from maybe the application to being approved and then getting the money into your bank.
I suppose the first stage after approval is really talking to your solicitor and preparing the paperwork, because obviously a charge document has to go on the title deed of 10 years. And so for people who don't know what that is, it got 70,000 from the council. I think it's after 5 years, if you decide to sell the house, I think you've got to pay back 90%, apologies. So look at it, you're in for the long term. Now you can live in it as well as rented or a mixture, but as long as you don't sell. So the solicitor is the first point of contact. It depends on how long the project takes you. I give myself about 12 months. You've got to do it in 13 months, but it depends on how big your refit is or how much work you have to do to the house. So I was happy with the time. I suppose we had a tenant in situ just before Christmas, which was spectacular. We had our audit at this end of November, which obviously led on to the next stage then of formal approval for the monies to be drawn down. From that point up to getting paid, I think was in mid-April. I think it was early April. So there's quite a long window there. You allow yourself another 12 or 14 weeks. So just because you get approved doesn't mean you're going to get paid the next day. It's another 12 or 14 weeks. Kick your solicitor off early in the process. That'll be my advice there. And obviously, once the money comes back then, it's yours to pay your bills or whatever you need to do with it. Not go for a holiday.
From your experience then on the ground, what would you say to someone thinking about taking on a vacant rural property but are a bit unsure about where to start? What would your advice be?
It's a big undertaking. I was fortunate enough, as I've said a couple of times, that I had sourced good suppliers that I had worked with before, and I was prepared to throw all my time into it. That's key. The other key thing really is trying to get that finance sorted. If you have a budget of, say, for example, 150,000, add another 20% to it, because you're going to come up against snags in an old house. Mm-hmm. The house is approaching 100 years of age. Yeah. So you're going to come up against other problems as you go down the project. So don't underestimate the project. It's huge fun. It's huge fun. And I suppose, look, I get great pride in restoring what was my home place. On occasions, as a couple of people have said, look, it's fantastic. It's great to see the house restored. And obviously that's a little buzz. But look, it can pay for itself also. There's a financial return on it. And as we know where the property market is at the moment, obviously a property is worth substantially more done up. And obviously from a rental perspective, I have four kids. So down the line, it's a great opportunity for one of the kids.
Would you say if you didn't have the grant, would you have been able to financially afford to do the house up?
Simple answer, I think no. Simply answer no. It's a lovely sum of money. No, I don't think I could. 70,000 is a lot of money, but yet it's nothing when you actually get into a project. On a total gut, it doesn't go very far. But no, I think the grant, look at it, it's fantastic. I'd actually like to see it even increase more. Look at I've over the Christmas they're gone, we're up in the west, etc. And obviously your eye is straight away attracted to other derelict projects and the huge amount of derelict houses in the country. It's unreal. So I think there's a huge opportunity there. But for anybody undertaking it, don't be afraid. Do your homework. Go out and try and secure finance. It's a must. And look at suppliers, working with people that you can trust that are available. Because if I hadn't have those guys, and probably they'd say to me sometimes, Jesus, you never left this alone. But you wouldn't complete the project in 11 and a half months, just wouldn't happen.
And my last question, kind of leading to it there, would you do it again?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I know the commercial side of things, you can take on many properties. I think on the residential side, you can only technically do two, I think it is. One in your name and maybe one in the wife's name. Look, it's a big undertaking, but I think there's huge reward. And while somebody's saying, Jesus, that house looks fantastic, it won't put money in your pocket, but there is a kick from it. And there is a nice feeling that you've added something back. I would encourage other people to consider. Watch the source of finances, and you've got to put the work in.
Seamus's story shows what's possible when a vacant property is given a new purpose. But bringing a home back to life is only part of the journey. Making sure properties are managed properly and continue to serve a purpose in our communities is another important part of the process. To talk more about that, I spoke to Michael Sweeney from Wexford County Council's Property Management Unit. So Michael, people often hear the term derelict property used in conversations around towns and villages. But from your experience, what does that actually mean in practical terms for the council and a community?
So Wexford County Council is legally bound to determine whether a property is derelict according to the definition of the Derelict Sites Act. So in practical terms, just to answer your question, what that means, to get away from the dry legal jargon, it means that a property is generally structurally defective, although it's important to note that if it's deemed dangerous, it's dealt with under different legislation, under dangerous structures legislation. So it would typically have missing broken windows, boarded up, it might be in need of plastering, painting, the fascia and soffits might be in need of attention, missing roof, walls, generally in poor condition, collapsed, might be excessive vegetation or an accumulation of rubbish. So a general appearance of dereliction and disrepair. As you can see, it can be quite subjective as to what is a derelict site, but it's generally quite obvious when you're looking at a property. But we do have to be cognizant of the legal definition when we're classifying a property to be derelict. It's important also to note that some people conflate dereliction with vacancy. Two very different terms. A property can obviously be vacant but not derelict. And there's been some discussion of late about the need to update the 1990 Act to broaden and strengthen the definition of what dereliction is, because often you can have some superficial works can bring the property back out of the strict legal definition of what is derelict. But this is often temporary, and ultimately it's an unsatisfactory solution to dereliction. But obviously for the time being we're constrained by the current legal definition. I might also add there's a theory called the broken window theory, and it basically operates around the premise that if there's a broken window and it's left unrepaired, that all the rest of the windows can subsequently become more susceptible to being broken. That concept is applied to the dereliction program that we're applying to try and address and stop dereliction, to stop antisocial behaviour, vandalism and general appearance of the neighbourhood.
Michael, your role involves engaging with owners of derelict properties where compulsory acquisition may become a possibility. What do those conversations usually look like, and how important is communication at that stage?
So as with all relationships, communication is obviously vitally important, and I'm in the property management section, and we generally engage with owners of the derelict properties once they've officially been placed on the derelict sites register. There's currently approximately 150 properties on Wexford County Council's derelict sites register, and it attracts an annual levy of 7% of the valuation of the property at the date that the property was entered onto the register, which obviously adds up to a significant amount over time. And the council have recently ramped up its efforts in relation to collection of outstanding derelict sites levies. And the government announced, you may have heard, the government announced in Budget 2025 that revenue will be taking over collection of levies from 2027. It's also important to note that there's significant engagement with property owners in advance of any property being placed onto the derelict sites register. And prior to its entry, our technical staff would carry out an on-site inspection to establish if a property is derelict. And we would make recommendations about what works are required to address those issues. And the owners are notified of the works required to bring the property back out of dereliction within a reasonable time frame. So every opportunity is afforded to property owners to address the dereliction prior to it going on to the derelict sites register, or indeed proceeding to CPO. If it has gone on to onto the derelict sites register, then it is referred to ourselves in property management, and we would then write an initial letter of engagement to the property owner seeking their plans to address the dereliction within a reasonable time frame. And the council must be satisfied that any proposals submitted will address the dereliction to their satisfaction within those time frames. And we'd also in the letter we'd signpost owners of properties to potential grant funding to assist with their addressing the dereliction. And you've probably heard some of those vacant property refurbishment grants known as Croí Cónaithe grants. I think I may have spoken to some of my colleagues about that. And there's grants of up to 70,000 there to renovate derelict properties, subject to general terms and conditions. There are other potential support too, under repair and leasing schemes, etc. But I won't go into those. Often the initial letter can lead to contact from the owner where a plan is agreed, and we'd continue to engage with the owner on an ongoing basis to try and find a mutually beneficial solution to the dereliction. That's the carrot here is the potential availability of grants and the possibility of removing the property from the derelict sites register and to avoid the accumulation of the derelict sites levies. But on the opposite side, we have the stick then that we'd remind owners that where the council is not satisfied that the dereliction or the plans submitted to address the dereliction is not going to bring about a resolution within a reasonable time frame to the dereliction, we're obliged to consider the potential compulsory acquisition of that property as allowed for under the Derelict Sites Act.
Just picking up on what you said there about the time frames to address the dereliction, does it depend on the situation, or is there a maximum time or minimum time that for that?
No, we'd be very reasonable with the owner. Once we see that there is a level of genuine engagement, we are prepared to work with the property owners. It really, as you say, it very much depends on, is it a superficial dereliction issue, or is it more requiring a larger intervention. And sometimes the property owner would need to apply for a refurbishment grant. Obviously, that's a process that has to be gone through. Sometimes they need to apply for planning permission. Again, once we see that there's positive, tangible plans in place that we feel that will ultimately address the dereliction, we're prepared to work with the property owners. We'll give them every chance possible to do that.
One other thing that I picked up on that you said there, revenue will be taking over from 2027. You've obviously been involved in that process for the last couple of years. Do you think that revenue taking over will be a good idea?
It's not clear now at the moment what collection or how the collection of the new tax is what it's going to be called. It's going to replace the levy, and that's why revenue can collect it under a tax bracket. Certainly the collection rates by councils, not just in Wexford but nationally, have been disappointing, and there has been some media coverage on that recently. And revenue obviously has significant powers that councils, local authorities don't have to ensure those derelict sites levies or taxes that are being called now will be collected. So I think with that in mind, those extra powers will focus minds.
For listeners who may not be familiar with it then, can you explain what a compulsory purchase order or a CPO actually is and why councils sometimes need to consider using that process?
So our strong preference is to work with property owners to come to a satisfactory resolution of the dereliction, which is mutually beneficial to both parties. However, ultimately there is a possibility that following engagement with the owners, a decision to move to a compulsory acquisition can be taken. But the council is very mindful to afford property owners time and every reasonable opportunity to address dereliction. And we'll be very mindful of the constitutional property rights of owners of properties. But those property rights, they're not absolute. The Constitution, and it has through legal decisions been determined that those property rights, constitutional property rights, must be balanced against principles of social justice and the common good. Just to go through what a CPO or a CPA looks like, it's prescribed statutory steps are set out in the Act. We follow those through and we serve notices on what are deemed to be interested parties to the property. We advertise in local newspapers and we put up a notice on site itself. This notifies the owner and affords any affected interested parties an opportunity to object to the CPO if that's what they wish to do by presenting a plan to address the dereliction. And we in the council then would consider any such objections. And if accepted, the objection to the CPO is discontinued. Or not accepted is referred to on Comuchun Planola. Where the CPO is ultimately successful, the property comes into the ownership of the council by way of what's called a vesting order. Again, interested parties are notified of this and advertised as to how to submit a claim for compensation. They must prove their right to compensation. Compensation is paid on the basis of net proceeds of sale. And in Wexford County Council, we've CPO'd over 20 properties since 2023 under the CPO Activation Programme. The CPO Activation Programme is a Department of Housing Local Government initiative, which includes a programme called the Urban Regeneration and Development Fund, called TREE. And we have a target under those programmes in 2026 to CPO an additional 10 derelict properties.
Seamus's story shows us that bringing a derelict property back to life is about much more than restoring walls and roofs. It's about creating homes, protecting the character of our communities, and finding new purpose for buildings that may otherwise have been left behind. And as Michael explained, there are also important steps beyond the refurbishment itself. Throughout this series, we've seen that every building has its own story and every restoration journey is different. Next week, we're heading to Wexford Town to look at another type of transformation, bringing homes back above the shop. We'll be joined by Andy Doyle, who's currently converting the former Coleman Doyle premises on the corner of South Main Street and Bright Street, transforming unused storage areas above the commercial units into 6 new apartments. Andy's project is a great example of how existing town centre spaces can be reimagined and brought back into use. We'll also be joined by Craig Inez, Senior Executive Engineer with Wexford County Council's Building Control Team, to explain more about his important role. That's all coming up next time on Back to Life, County Wexford, Stories of Derelict Homes.